Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 12. It reads, "Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks it will be opened. For which of you, if he has a son, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, we'll give him a serpent. If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father, who is in heaven, give good things to those who ask him? So whatever you wish others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets."
In Matthew chapter 22 and in verse 35, a lawyer came to Jesus. And he asked him a question, and we're told in the scriptures there, he asked him that question, testing him. And the question he asked at first seems like a reasonably good question. He asked him, "Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law?" And yet in some ways, that question reveals a complete and a total misunderstanding of the nature of the law. That lawyer supposed, as I think most of us do, that the law is just kind of a hodgepodge of different laws. Don't do this, do this, don't do the other, and more don'ts than do's. But somehow out of all of that, he's testing Jesus and says, "Can you pick out one of those that's more important than the others?" And of course, in the testing, I think here is a trap, that if he says this one, then they will say, "Well, what about this one?" And if he says that one, they will say, "What about the other one?" And that reveals, I think, that idea that there is this kind of conflict among the laws, this random almost set of almost incomprehensible number of laws. And yet Jesus, who understands the law better than this lawyer ever will, because he was the author of the law, says to him pretty quickly and without any hesitation and goes right to the heart of the matter, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." And then he says, on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. The laws that you see before you, the laws that you read and struggle with, are not in conflict with one another. They're not random sets of rules and regulations. They really are one comprehensive whole. And they're devoted to these two objects. One, our relationship to God, and the other, our relationship to one another. And in fact, that's what the Ten Commandments are when you look at those Ten Commandments that became the foundation for the law of Moses. The first four are about our relationship with God. "You will have no other God except for me. You will not create any idols to bow down to them. You will not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And you will keep holy the seventh day that he is made holy." And then there are those six that follow that have to do with our relationship with one another. "Honor your father and your mother. Thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house or wife or anything else of your neighbor's." Those are the basic rules by which we are to relate to those who are around about us. Now, those are all, in some ways, negative rules about our relationship to others, but those negative rules are based on an original positive premise: love your neighbor as yourself. And in fact, when we get to the Sermon on the Mount, we're not surprised that where Jesus is trying to give them a correct view of the law, "You have heard it said, but I say unto you." You've heard these misinterpretations of the law, but I say unto you. That as Jesus nears the end of the sermon, that he goes back to this fundamental basic principle there in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. "In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you would that they should treat you. For this is the law and the prophets. There is not just some jumble of intersecting kind of rules and regulations. The law has a purpose. And the purpose is to cure our relationship with God and to cure our relationship with others. And we think very frequently of the law as being thou shalt not, as indeed within the Ten Commandments, principally they are thou shalt not. To a large extent, that is true when we go back and read through the codification of the law. But that's because of the hardness of our hearts. That's because as children, we're constantly trying to run away from those positive principles that are embedded in the scriptures. And like small children, parents constantly have to say to them, don't do that, don't do this, don't do the other, until the parents themselves are sick of hearing themselves say, don't do this and don't do that and don't do the other. But ultimately, we inculcate into our children the positive principles of living. And we don't have to say, don't do this and don't do that and don't do the other. And the old law is a tutor to bring us to the time of Christ, was filled with those, don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. But all of it pointed to the time of maturity when we'd understand the positive aspects of the law, the positive aspects of our relationship with others. And here now Jesus is saying, for the citizens of the kingdom, those people who are blessed beyond any conception of blessing that men have ever had before, those who are citizens of the kingdom of heaven, they will know what the positive essence of the law of relationship to others is all about. That is what we call, and rightly so, I think, the golden rule. We may think, too, about this. Why are there so much murder, adultery, stealing, fornication, and the false witnesses and the sins that characterize sins against other people in the world today? For 2,000 years, we have the golden rule right here in front of us. And yet people don't obey that. They don't live by that. Most people, you know, are happy to say, this is a good rule, and I wish everybody else lived by this. But when it comes right down to their own lives, it's kind of like, if everybody else lived by these, that'd be really good for me, especially if I could get away with breaking them once in a while, then I'd have the advantage. People have not gotten to the point of being transformed in their character so that this positive rule really abides in their heart and resonates with them. And the problem is that we have to first of all be reconciled to God and transformed into His likeness before we really understand and appreciate and can make the application of this positive principle in our lives. Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, is saying, this is the way you thought about it, but this is not the way it's going to be, and this is not the way God intended it. This is not the way the law was intended, the way the Pharisees have interpreted it. The righteousness of the Pharisees is a righteousness that falls far short of what you ought to encompass in your lives. If you learn to be what you ought to be, you will be blessed. And the citizens of the kingdom of heaven are going to be of that nature. And here is one of the characteristics, maybe the characteristic of those who are citizens of the kingdom of heaven. When they have been transformed in their relationship with God and are added to the church, they are translated from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light, this is what they're going to be like. Now later he's going to tell us more about how it is that we are converted and how we are transformed and how we are translated from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. But for now he's talking about the character of those who are going to be members of the kingdom of heaven. And look at the context here again at the latter part of this sermon where Jesus is speaking here in chapter 7 about our relationship to other people, and particularly the context is judgment. Now, he's going to get to the judgment that God's going to exercise on us in the last few verses of chapter 7. But for now, he's talking about the judging that we exercise in relationship to one another. And we have to make discernments about people. And we ought to be careful about the manner in which we make those discernments, those judgments about people. Because that's true in whatever kind of context it is. And verse 1, judge not that you be not judged. Don't be hypocritical and hypercritical in the way that the Pharisees are. Because if you judge people that way, you're going to be judged with that standard yourself. In verse 6, though, he says, don't be giving the pearls of truth to those people that can't appreciate them. You got to make some determinations about people in those contexts as well. And in verse 11, in particular, God knows how to give good gifts to you, then you ought to know how to give good gifts to one another. And when they ask, you ought to be prepared to give. You need to know how to give, though. That's why verse 12 sums up by saying, Therefore, judging is difficult, whether it's judging people in condemnation or whether it's judging people in terms of giving them gifts, judging is difficult. And we need some standard by which we can make those judgments. And here really is the standard. The standard is what we call the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. The standard that you're supposed to use in dealing with other people is not the harshness of the Pharisees, nor is it the indifference of many people in the modern world who would like to say, judge not that you be not judged, who would like to say, just live and let live and have a matter of indifference toward one another. Nor is it the kind of unyielding sort of standard of justice and fairness and give to people what they deserve and what they've earned. The standard we're supposed to use as citizens of the kingdom of heaven as we deal with other people is a higher standard of that. We're to treat them in the same way we want them to treat us. We're to do to them what we want them to do to us. This is a kinder and a gentler standard. It is our own standard. It is the standard we're familiar with when we think about how we want other people to treat us. That's the way we should treat them. We're to put others on the same level with ourselves. We're to acknowledge that they are as worthy as we are. We are to recognize that we are as obligated to them as we want them to be obligated to us. And what Jesus is saying here does not allow some kind of facile way out, which says, well, I don't need anything and I don't need anybody. I am a rock. I am an island. So that's the way I want people to treat me. No, deep down in your heart of hearts, you know that's not true. You know you need people. You know that you're going to want people to be kind to you. You know that you're going to want people to be generous with you on occasion. And so you need to do that to others. And there's an implication here in some ways about this. We know when we need kindness, and we know when sometimes we need a quick kick to get us started because of our obdurate hearts. We know when we have erred because of weakness and need to be treated with gentleness and encouragement and have others to bear our burdens. We also know when we have violated and rebelled against God in arrogance and we need people to call us up short. We can't know anybody else that well. But the implication here in some ways is we need to try. We need to try to know other people that well so we can give them that which we would want if we were in their situation. And when in doubt about other people's motives or the circumstances of their lives, then we'd use ourselves as the standard. Which is an easy thing to do. Well, on one level it's easy because we know what that standard is. The other level is hard because we don't want to do that. Because we think, you know, a little bit more about ourselves than we do others. Rudyard Kipling said of this that he always assumed the best about everybody else. Because it just saved time that way. And sometimes we feel that we've given people not the benefit of the doubt, but the harshness of a judgment. And then we found out, well, really, they weren't quite what we thought they were. And now we've got to go back through all those kind of thought processes and reevaluate them. And we've got to go back and try and straighten that out. It would have just been easier in the first place to think the best of them, because that's what we would want them to think of us when there's any doubt. And you got to be careful in the application of this golden rule principle too. Because sometimes we kind of get a little selfish about that. Like the man who thought and thought and thought about what he could get for his wife for Christmas, and then he gave her a shotgun. Because that's what he would have wanted. Well, that's not what the principle means here, you see. It's not out of some kind of selfishness that we give people what we would want them to give us. No, we want them to give us what we want, so we should give them what they want. And that's why it makes, you know, giving gifts a hard time. I mean, I could buy gifts for myself all day long. In fact, that's what I do on Amazon.com when I'm bored. But now you start thinking about, uh-oh. You know, it's time to buy a gift for this person or that person, or the other, my wife, my kids. You know, what do you get now? Now, you see, we haven't paid as much attention to that through the year as we ought to have. The golden rule would lead us to do that. And know this about what he says here too. That we should treat others the way we want to be treated. We should do unto others the way we want them to do to us. Now, that rule is positive and not negative, as some people would suppose. It enjoins actively seeking the other person's well-being, not just don't be miserable to them, don't mistreat people. That's pretty good, but that's not going as far as Jesus says. That's not what the citizens of the kingdom are going to be doing. That's easy, and most religions and philosophies understand and will encourage that. You can go through the major religions, and among the Hindus, they say this is the sum of duty, to do nothing to others you wouldn't want them to do to you. Or to Buddhists, don't hurt others with pains which pain you yourself. Or the Jewish Talmud, which says what's hateful to you, do not do to your fellow men. Or even a Socrates, the secular humanist in Greece, do not do unto others what angers you if it's done to you by them. Those are all real good rules. And we'd all be a whole lot better off if everybody could even live by that. But you recognize Jesus went beyond that. Jesus asked more than that. He said, not only should you not do things to them that you wouldn't want done to you, but you should think actively about what you can do for them that you would want done for yourself. And the Baha religion says he should not wish for others that which he does not wish for himself. But it's not a matter of wishing only. Jesus says it's not a matter of wishing well for others. It's not just a matter of saying our thoughts and our prayers are with you, as we so often hear and so often want to do. It means doing something. Jesus doesn't just say in the golden rule, you should wish the best for other people. No, he says you need to do for them what you would want them to do for you. It is truly the golden rule, because it stands out above everything else that is taught in philosophy or in religion. And there are several things that obviously kind of are included in this. One is, it's simply a matter of kindness, of being kind to other people. And how much better life would be if everybody we met was kind. What a great world this would be. If everybody you met, you could count on them to be kind. It's almost incomprehensible. Try a smaller thing. How great and wonderful it would be if in this congregation, everybody was kind to one another. That's pretty good. Just think how great it would be in our family if everybody, every day, in every way, was kind. It's almost incomprehensible how much better our life would be. And as some have said, there may be a lot of things you'll regret in life, but kindness is never one of them. You may regret a harsh word that you've said. You may regret a gift that you didn't think to give, but you never regret kindness. C.R. Gibson wrote a little poem about that. I have wept in the night for the shortness of sight that to somebody's need made me blind, but I never have yet felt a twinge of regret for being a little too kind. Well, maybe that's not really poetry. Maybe that's just versification. But the point is a good one. You may regret a lot of things, but being kind is not one of them that you will lie awake at night regretting. another aspect of the golden rule, and that which is perhaps uniquely of Christ, is what he commands for us elsewhere in his teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, and that is forbearance in the face of provocation. We are to turn the other cheek to personal insults. And again, that's what God does for us. In the face of our hostility, our animosity, our outrage about the commandments that he's given to us, there is the example of God's forbearance, God's kindness, and his long-suffering, loving kindness are designed to lead us to repentance. He is kind, even to the ungrateful and the wicked. The rain falls on the just and the unjust, and we're to be like that as well. Even when people have insulted us and misused us, we are not to take our revenge. And everybody understands what a great quality that would be. When we think about the kind of person we would want to be, we don't usually think about ourselves as our faces twisted up in anger and rage and getting even. Well, I guess some teenage boys, juvenile delinquents do daydream about that a lot, but that's not the way it ought to be. That's not what Christ is like. Kindness is nobler ever than revenge. A genuine application of the golden rule will never let anger lead us to attack somebody else in order to hurt them or to score points or to get even. Because that's not the way God has treated us. And that's not the way we would want them to treat us. We need to learn the loving kindness of God who is our Father. Kindness in return for hostility really is the fruit of the Spirit. I mean, it's the fruit of the Spirit in the ripeness of the full season of the Spirit. And we might only pray that we would learn to make that application of the golden rule. Now, one of the things that sometimes we say about our failure to treat other people the way that we would want them to treat us, particularly when we get angry and we lose control, is to say, I can't help myself. But you know, really, that's a cop-out. Before the God of heaven, who acts in our own best interest over and over and over again, instead of retaliating against us when he has every opportunity and every right to do so, the Father who says that he forgives us with unlimited grace, so long as we repent. In the face of that kind of example and that kind of loving kindness, we just are not allowed to cop out and say, I can't help it. I couldn't help myself. An application of the golden rule would mean that we ought to control our anger and that we ought not to lash out and provoke at others in retaliation just because they provoked us, because that's not the way we would want them to act toward us. A third of the characteristics of the golden rule and the application of that would be compassion, a ready sympathy, a sincere concern, an understanding of the needs of other people, because that's exactly when we are most in need of other people's compassion. Is when we are weak and when we're discouraged and when we're downtrodden, when we're in ill health and when we're sick and when we're tired, when we're in poverty. Those are the times that we would want other people to pay attention, to sympathize, and in compassion to reach out to us. And that's exactly what we owe to other people. Applying the golden rule is caring for others, not just caring for them in word or in emotions, but caring for them in deed as well. And that's what Paul wrote in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 12. Clothe yourself with compassion and kindness and gentleness and patience. It ought to be the the clothing we put on when we get up in the morning before we put on whatever other clothing we wear. They made the old story about the cowboys. They get up in the morning and put the hat on first. Then they put everything else on. Christians get up in the morning and they put on compassion and kindness and gentleness and patience. And then we worry about the rest of our attire. It's what Jesus said about those who are citizens of the kingdom of heaven. When you come to people who are acting as they ought not to be and you have to make some judgment about them, do so with compassion. When you encounter people and you have to make a decision about whether to give them the gospel or whether you need to give good gifts to them, treat them with compassion. We ought to be kind and compassionate to everybody, because I'll tell you this secret, everybody's having a hard time. The way the world is today, everybody's having a hard time. They're having a bad day. You can be pretty sure of that. And I expect people, when I'm having a bad day, I expect them to say, well, you know, Dickie's having a bad day. Stay out of his way. You know, be nice to him. That's what we owe to others, what we expect for ourselves. And that leads to another characteristic, and that is helpfulness. We ought to be practically helpful to other people. Sightless beggar was brought to Jesus in Mark chapter 10, and he asked him what he asked a lot of people. What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? What do you want? He said to the disciples when they followed him after they had heard John point him out. What do you want me to do for you? He said to the paralyzed man. That was the spirit of Jesus, was being helpful. That ought to be the characteristic of those of us who are Christ-like. In exchange for the harshness of the law, and certainly in exchange for the harshness of the Pharisees, Jesus offered his help. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. He didn't intend to lay on anybody any more than they could bear. Nobody is tempted beyond what they can bear. For with every temptation, God makes a way of escape. We ought to be helpful to one another in that way as well. And another simple application, I think, of the golden rule of treating others the way you want them to treat you is the matter of courtesy. Just being courteous, which seems like a simple sort of thing, and yet it is something that is so absent in the world in which we live today. It seems to me, maybe, that we have forgotten courtesy as we have laid off manners. And the truth of the matter is, manners are really, in essence, just standardized courtesy. You know, we look sometimes back at the old period pieces and they dressed for dinner, and it's like a little bit like, you don't need to put on a bow tie to eat supper. I understand that. But you ought to put on a shirt before you go to Sweet Tomatoes. I mean, not because it makes any difference about whether you can eat or not, because it makes a difference to other people whether they can eat or not. We need to have some kind of courtesy for other people. You know, it just amazes me about people that are Christians and they're religious and they're concerned, really genuinely concerned about doing what is right, and they forget the simple manners, the simple courtesy to other people. They play their music too loud. They cut in front of other people. You know, there's no courtesy. And we especially need courtesy in the home. Well, maybe in the dorm, where people are packed close together. That's where, you know, there's a need for manners and courtesy in those occasions. And particularly in the home, where we take one another for granted, people forget about manners and courtesy. Child says to their parents, "You're a whole lot nicer to the people at church than you are to me." Well, and that ought not to be the case. We ought to be nice to the people at church. Maybe we ought to be nicer to them than we are to our children, but we ought to be nicer to our children. We ought to be nicer to our husband and to our wife. We often forget about simple kindness and courtesy in the pressures of the home, and because we've taken those things for granted. I read a story once about a man, and he was talking about his relationship to his wife, and he really kind of struck home with him. One day, his wife came home, and it was raining, and she was outside and trying to get some things she'd bought out of the car and into the house. And he said, you know, it just struck me how many times I'd let her carry things in by herself. And, you know, the thing that struck me about that was she was the girl next door. And when I was in love with her, when I wanted to date her, when I was dating her, I looked out the window to see her coming up the driveway. And if she needed any, I was out the door and opened her door for her and helped her with whatever packages or books she was carrying. But now we're married, we don't have to do that. No, that's not the case. We need to be courteous and kind within the marriage relationship. Being nice to people, compassionate and kind, is not just a matter of, you know, like manners. It's religious matter. It's what Jesus meant, and it's what God meant when he gave the law and the Ten Commandments. You ought to be nice to other people. You ought to treat them the way you want to be treated yourself. As Elwood P. Dowd said, I've tried being smart, and I'll tell you, being nice is a whole lot better. And the truth of the matter is this, by treating others the way we treat ourselves or the way we would want to be treated by them, being kind to other people and nice to other people and compassionate to other people, looking out for other people, really is the way to make ourselves happy. It's what Jesus started with, blessed are. And he might well have said that here, blessed are those who treat others the way they would want to be treated. It's a simple matter that I think we recognize, though sometimes it has to be pointed out to us. In the altruism paradox, an article written in Psychological Bulletins, they asked people to look at 10 people they knew pretty well. And they said, write down the list of those 10 people. And now on one side, write down and check off the ones that you think are very happy and the ones that are only sort of happy and the ones that are not very happy. And on the other column, write down the ones you think that are very kind and those that are sort of kind and those that are not kind and impatient. And guess what? The ones that are kind are the ones that are happy. And you may think it's because they're happy that they can afford to be kind, but what we find out is it's because they're kind that they're happy. You can give people $100 and you say to half of them, spend this $100 on yourself, whatever will make you happiest. Whether it's a new dress or whether it's a nice night out on the town with a meal and dessert and movie if you want. And to the other half, you say, take this $100 and find somebody else to spend it on. And guess which ones are happier? And guess which ones are happy for longer? The ones that spend the money on someone else. Blessed are those who obey the golden rule. What's really good, what's really of value in life, is not always obvious from the point of view of the world. John O'Reilly asked that question in a verse he called, What is Really Good? What is real good? I ask in amusing mood. Order, said the law court. Knowledge, said the school. Truth, said the wise man. Pleasure, said the fool. Love, said a maiden. Beauty, said a page. Freedom, said the dreamer. Home, said the sage. Fame, said the soldier. Equity, the seer. Spake my heart full sadly. The answer is not here. Then within my bosom, softly this I heard. Each heart holds the secret, and kindness is the word. Kindness is what is really good. And how do we know? We know because the golden rule tells us so. We know because God and Jesus has been kind to us. And should we do other than treat others the way he has treated us? And how do we know what we should do for others? Simple rule. treat them the way you would want them to treat you if the situation was reversed. God has been so good to us. He is here indeed this evening, gathered with us to remind us of His gift to us and His invitation for those who are not yet members of the citizens of the kingdom of heaven. Pray that if you have not made that decision for Jesus, you would do so this evening, urged on by His kindness as well as by the blessings of being a citizen of the kingdom, and that you would repent of your sins, be baptized for remission of them, buried in the death of Jesus Christ, raised again to a new life, transformed, as we all pray that we will be, so that we can live by the golden rule. Let's sing this song as we encourage one another.